Welcome to Sloppy Spoilers with your host, DT2. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Sloppy Spoilers. This week we're going to be talking about Titans Season 2, Episode 5. And there's a lot that happened, and then nothing happened. You'll see what I mean as we go on. Let me welcome my co-host, David Nemesis Howard. What's up, Dave?
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Glad to be here once again from Southern California. I'm ready to talk some sloppy spoilers.
All righty. Well, let's dive right in. The first thing that we want to talk about here is Jason Todd. Now, how are we feeling about this version of Jason? So far, I think he's been pretty comic accurate in terms of kind of being a punk and kind of getting on your nerves and kind of aggravating you with everything that he says. And slight spoiler, we're coming up on a thing where we might be able to get to decide again whether or not he lives or dies. Oh, my goodness. We might have to go through that whole thing again.
Are they going to have a 1-900 number again?
Online poll or something. I don't know how serious it is. I have to research what I saw. But tell me what you think about this version of Jason. Do you think he's fitting the bill, comic accurate for the show, or what?
Up until a couple days ago, I thought that he was incredibly comic accurate, and he was doing a great job of making me be like, God, I don't want him to die, but I'm not going to shed many tears, you know? Uh-huh. I'm going to become Red Hood. But then I saw someone put up a Twitter message which made me think and didn't change my opinion of how much I am enjoying the character being the punk that he is. But someone said, and it made, you know, like I said, it got the wheels turning, that this character has quite a few traits, if not most of the traits, of Damian Wayne. Even though he's a punk and he's doing a lot of the Jason Todd type stuff, when he's dealing with Dick Grayson and even Batman type thing, the way that he was responding to Deathstroke in this episode seemed much more Damian Wayne than Jason Todd. Or the other alternative is that I never realized how many similarities there are between Jason Todd and Damian Wayne. So that's also a possibility.
You know, it's funny because I saw that comparison too. And I don't know if I wholeheartedly agree with it. Maybe the effect they have on you, although I can see some of it. But I feel like this Jason is pretty accurate for who we think Jason should be. But he, you know, Damian, the difference between Damian and Jason is that Damian has that arrogance, that self-righteous feeling that, you know, he deserves to be who he is and do what he does, kind of like his grandfather and kind of like his dad. Like, obviously, we're the right people in the world.
He can always throw out the Wayne / League of Shadows card, which Jason Todd doesn't have.
Right. And obviously, Damon is like, you know, obviously, you know, our perceptions, our judgments are always on point. Why can't we just, you know, why don't other people see how right we are, that kind of thing? And just like his grandfather, he's kind of got that view of the world where people really aren't smart enough to know what to do on their own. So that's why he needs to step in and tell them. And that is not how Jason feels at all. Jason's mind, his worldview, is much smaller than that.
Jason has more of a chip on his shoulder and really has an inferiority complex when it comes to Dick Grayson, you know? He's really always trying to measure himself back next to the first Robin. Right. And so he's manufacturing that tension between the two all the time.
That's right. That's right. And that's where a lot of his attitude comes from, that need to prove or the need to be just as good as. Now, that's pretty accurate for comic book Jason. I just got through rereading Hush. And so a lot of that idea behind Batman maybe not loving Jason or not respecting Jason as much as he did Grayson, which isn't true, but they're not the same type of dude.
Yeah. It's almost like the rebound girlfriend type scenario. You know, it's almost like he feels like he's the rebound Robin, you know, and right. He's got this really bad it's in his mind constantly, and it casts a shadow over everything he does.
Absolutely. And speaking of Robin, I have to say that up until this episode, and a little bit of last episode, I thought this characterization of Grayson was pitch perfect. I just thought it was the best thing I've ever seen. With these last two episodes, however, some of the shine is coming off of that, because they've had him do tactically stupid things twice in a row now, or two episodes in a row. When we first meet this guy, he can't even go to a party without assessing the exits and who's got weapons, and wonder about what the Penguin's doing. And he's, you know, just completely convincing. But now he's done some things, you know, in two episodes that were just so ridiculous in terms of the strategy. Until, you know, I mean, I still love the show, still love the character. I still think he's the best live action Grayson I've ever seen, but I just don't understand this kind of wildly varying range of when he's smart and when he's not tactically. Do you know what I mean? Because they sold us on someone that was so hard and so trained, they could never turn it off. That's how we meet the character. But now he's like, all of a sudden, he's emotional. All of a sudden, he's guilt-ridden. I don't know. What do you think?
I hear what you're saying. I think they are really struggling with, I'm not going to say really struggling, but they're struggling with trying to make Dick vulnerable while still maintaining his, what's the word I'm looking for? Mystique as the original Robin / Nightwing. And, you know, the way that you would do that is you need to put a heck of a lot more work into having Deathstroke or whatever villain it is unbalance the Titans and unbalance Dick. Uh-huh. But for whatever reason, they need to unbalance him quickly. And so the easiest way to do that is to have Dick make mistakes. And, you know, we talked about a little bit about our last episode where we talked about Titans, where, you know, I mentioned a way they could go. And I know that you had said, you know, you really didn't want to see that, where it would be this angsty, dark moment where they did something really bad and now Dick Grayson needs to atone for it. And sure enough, it's become quite apparent that something pretty bad happened to Jericho and it was Titan's fault, and that Dick feels personally responsible and wants to atone for it. And the one who's going to keep him from sacrificing himself, being stupid, is going to be Corey, you know, who came in and pretty much saved his butt in this episode.
That's right, because we see Donna's burden of Aqualad, of Garsh, and then now we you know, that led to Grayson's burden of whatever went down with Jericho, and they have such bad blood with Slade, and it also seems like Rose doesn't maybe know all of this.
Right.
And so it's going to be interesting to see kind of when she gets introduced to what's going on, because what do you do when the good guys and the bad guys are both really dirty, you know? But next character I want to jump to that was featured really prominently in this episode is Raven. She still feels a little bit like, you know, the manic pixie goth girl to me, like it's still all about her, but not as much. But her storyline still seems to be kind of the same, like, well, I'm dealing with my dark side and it's all about me, whatever. But the thing about her is that, and I like the way they used her shadow self, because they made it look like wings this time. So they made it really like look like a real bird behind her. I really like that.
Yeah, that was really cool. I thought that was very cool effect.
But now she's kind of the Hulk, you know? Where, you know, you make her angry and something comes out that you don't like. You know, you're not going to like me when I'm angry.
I didn't even put those two together, but it's like a perfect analogy now that you said it.
You know? And yeah. So, I'm just wondering how much they can do with that. But maybe, you know, I must admit, it's, you know, I won't say jadedness. I'll just say I've seen this before.
Right.
Because, you know, we've both been in comics for so long. So we've seen this before many, many times. So I'm wondering what they can add to the character now that they've basically hulked her out. You know, where's that going to go?
Well, I think this is... a lot of people like this 10, 12 series arc that they do for seasons. Unfortunately, and I think it could be good because it advances the story quickly. You don't have as many lags. But I think a lot of times you're very limited in what you could do with different storylines. And, you know, you're adding multiple storylines here. Something invariably gets left behind. And I think a lot of what's going on with Raven is getting left behind because you have this whole subplot going on where she needs Corey. She wants Corey to come back. She's trying to deal with what's going on with her mind. But she's only getting limited screen time, so we're only getting, like, snippets of it. We're not getting a whole lot of backstory. Then, like you said, she hulks out on Rose and just destroys Rose. They think that she's killed her. So you think,
she did kill her. She did kill her.
And she came back to life. So you're like, okay, this whole subplot's going on. Corey came back to help Raven and then immediately leaves with Dick and the other adult titans to go do something and leaves her alone. You know, so it's like, and this happened, and now we're just going to drop it and leave it for the rest of the episode. There's a whole meatball hanging out there, and it's gone. And the next episode is titled Connor, so it's going to be a Connor Kent-centered episode. So you've got all this drama that happened with Raven. She's been talking about her feelings, about what's going on, how she changed. And then she kills Rose, and then we'll just leave it there and because we don't have any more time to deal with it.
Right, that's right. And So like I said, I agree with what you're saying about, I do like the 10 to 12 episode arcs. I think it makes everything tighter because I think if 23 episodes is too long now, right. I think we've kind of gotten spoiled by other shows and by binge watching and by a whole bunch of things because I really like it when there's only 12 episodes max because then I can get through it. When it's like 20, I'm like, that's going to have to be several holidays.
Right. But if I think my point is if you're going to do that 10, 12 episode series, the writers really need to start thinking, streamlining, thinking about, okay, we've got a limited amount of time to tell stories. You know, a lot of times writers, either for arrogance purposes or just because they want to keep things interesting, introduce subplots and various twists and turns. But if you only have a limited amount of time, you need to focus on the mission and get that done. And if something else is going to lag, maybe you need to cut it out and add more to your main mission. If you can't service the subplot and do it justice, you're probably better not doing it at all.
Well, I really think they're just going to do the simple thing and bring Trigon back at some point, and then maybe we'll get White Raven. Until that point, you know, she's going to keep hulking out, and I don't know. So it just depends on how they play it. But she very much reeks to me like the favorite. Which means she's gonna, whatever she does is not gonna be her fault, and everybody's gonna apologize to her and for her, and she's gonna do incredible damage but not suffer any consequences. I'm not looking forward to that if that's the way this plays out. I've seen that enough.
Right, and you're probably gonna get, I'm gonna say, she's gonna end up, it's gonna be something with either one of the villains, or it's gonna be something probably with one of the stronger, either, Donna Troy, or more likely, like Superboy, you know, and there's going to be a fight, and something serious is going to happen, and you may have collateral damage or even damage to civilians, and then you're going to have a whole story arc about how superheroes are going to have to deal with the consequences of their actions, and Raven, and, you know, it's going to be a whole thing, and like you said, we've seen a lot of it, and I don't know. I hope that that's not the way to go, but as per the last episode, we've already, you know, kind of foreshadow where it was going to go. And once again, I'm going to say it's not a bad series, but it was just like, it's right there. It's like, go a slightly different direction or make a slightly different choice, and it could just put it completely over the top.
That's right. That's right. It's on the edge of greatness, and we can feel that. The scene in the tunnel was kind of funny where Hank and Grayson started arguing about the fact that Jason's involved, and the girls just walk away. They're like, okay, we're out.
Yeah,
that was kind of funny. So, you know, I think that Slade is already getting in their heads. I mean, it's obvious that they've set this Slade up to be as much of a psychological warrior as a physical one. And That's where he was played on the animated Teen Titans. And that was the best version of Slade I've ever seen. And definitely. So I think that's good. Slade is basically making them face why they're there and making those that don't want to be there make that, you know, face that too.
And when he killed Dr. Light to use him as a way to advance what he wanted to do, that made a lot of sense for me. And it worked for me. Go back a little bit with the Hank stuff. I think this character is being underused or not used properly in a lot of ways, because up until this episode, I'd forgotten that he had gone through all of that trauma with sexual abuse and stuff. And it's like, okay, if this is such a defining part of his character, and it should be, I wish that I had seen more of that and not been able to forget it. And also, I think it could have been so interesting. You know, I don't know if they'll do this in the future. I don't think they're going to go this way. But if he had been abused and everything and these things had happened, for Deathstroke to use that against him, it would have been really dark, but definitely something I could see Deathstroke do. And way to create a wedge, you know, it'd just be... There are some really dark places you could go with that as far as Deathstroke, but some ways to do some storyline that would have been incredibly impactful and would have involved Hawk and Dove a little bit more and got them to be able to really split the team up between, you know, even more than they already are.
Well, you pretty much have to accept that this Hank is Worf. He's the Worf of the show. So he only exists to be humiliated and emasculated.
Okay. That puts things in light, but I see it.
But they don't do anything else with him. I want you to think about how many times Dawn has scolded him. That would be every episode.
Right. He's always wrong. He's always beaten down.
That's right. Every episode, she's in his case, in his face, on his case, talking about you did something wrong, or you're not honoring the fact that you're using, or you didn't honor your word, or you're throwing a tantrum. She's on him all the time, every episode, reprimanding him about something.
And I want to see Hank finally blow up at her, you know?
I do too. Because they need to break up, because she does not want to be with him. She'd rather be with Grace, and that's so obvious. It hurts.
Yeah.
It's painful. I'm like, dude, because I just want to talk to Hank. I'm like, dude, do you understand? She's trying to make you break up with her because she's done with you. You might not be done with her, but she's done with you. So you need to, you know, hasten this and move on. He'd be like, what are you talking about, dude? I'm like, never mind, whatever. Whatever, you'll see. Which brings me to Beast Boy and how much of a non-factor he is in this show and in this episode. What is up with that? I mean, we talked about it before, and you said it might be budget. And I think I agree with that, because I just don't understand, you know, you could lift him out of this episode and it would be like, so what?
It's budget. I think budget is part of it, because they don't want to allow, or they don't have the money to have him do all the things he could possibly do. But part of it is just, you know, they've gone a direction. They picked a direction for the show. And it's definitely, you know, I made a joke before we came on air that the specter of Zack Snyder is kind of hanging around this series, and you can see it. And I'm fine with that for the most part. I mean, I'm a guy who likes Constantine. I like, you know, Swamp Thing. I like the darker aspects. But if you're going to do that, you can't go all dark. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to say the words, but it's like the famous Robert Downey line from Tropic Thunder. You know, it's like, you can't go all dark. You need something to contrast with. And that contrast in Titans, when things would get really dark for the Titans, Beast Boy slash Changeling was that contrast. He's the comic relief. He's the guy who is always trying to tie the group together and keep them together. And they've sidelined this character. And I know, and this is the one really critique I would have and say that they're not doing a good job with is with Beast Boy. I don't think they're doing a good job visually with him because of budget. And I don't think they're doing a good job writing him. It's my one main critique of the show. If there was, I only got one, would be that they failed on Beast Boy on a lot of levels, I would say.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Before Beast Boy, it was Wally West. But kind of once they, you know, put Gar in that position, but especially the cartoon, then he's wisecracking, he's goofy, he's lovable, he's naive, he's a whole bunch of things, and it's such a wonderful balance to all the other characters, and that is gone here, which is a shame. Just absolutely a shame.
And you even have that, you have that all over, all through comics. I mean, you even look at Batman himself, you know, when Dick Grayson is being Nightwing or Robin, and he's with Batman, he's the one that provides that contrast to Batman's broodiness and darkness most of the time. You know, not that he doesn't have his own broody and dark moments himself when he's by himself, but when he's with Batman, he's often that snark, that lightness, that comic relief. He can provide that aside that Alfred can often do with his dry wit and humor. And it's important to give that contrast to break up the darkness, and it better, it gives you a better ability to see, you know, where exactly the different characters are and to understand what's going on and to be able to contrast it, you know?
But also, Grayson can be happy. He's been happy with Barbara, and he's been happy with Corey. This one on Titans doesn't seem like he's ever going to be happy. It seems like he's constantly beating himself up. Now, also what happens in this episode, you talked about it before, but Destro kills Dr. Light as a way to kind of bait and switch the Titans that are tracking him. I will agree with your assessment that it's such a Slade thing to do. But I also have to say, I kind of miss this version of Dr. Light. It's one of the few versions I've seen where I kind of took it seriously. I did like the helmet. The helmet was still really goofy. But they gave him more than light powers. They gave him electrical powers. They gave him, they made him much more formidable in a way I've never seen. And I don't know, something about it, I just really liked it. And so I was kind of sorry to see him go, especially that way. You know, if he's going to go out, I wanted to see him go out fighting instead of.
And be incarcerated or something so he can come back at a later time.
Right.
I can't agree with you more. When I first heard, when the season was getting ready to ramp up and they were casting, and I was looking at casting and everything, I heard that Dr. Light was one of the villains for the season. I was like, oh man, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Dr. Light, I mean, no offense, but I'm like, Dr. Light's a, to me, I kind of almost look at Dr. Light as a joke, you know, and a lot of times when you see him in like the Teen Titans Go or something, I mean, he is a joke. I mean, it's just, I was like, whoa, wow, where are we going? And then I saw this version of Dr. Light, you know, first he's buff. He actually has some fighting skill, and then they amped up his powers and everything. I was like, yeah, this version of Dr. Light's legit, you know? And then now he's dead. So I agree with you completely on that one.
So let's move on and talk about Rose Tico. I'm sorry, Rose Wilson. I still very much like
Rose
her.
Tico. We got to have a moment of silence for Rose Tico. They just announced that she's being removed from, like, merchandise and everything. So poor Rose.
Oh, man. First she was here, and now she's gone. But Rose Wilson basically demonstrates she doesn't just have a healing factor, she has a resurrection factor. So I want to know, how far does that go? Because that's not the same as healing. If you get hurt and you're still alive and everything you got heals, that's one thing. She was dead. And her bones and her joints and her muscles and everything just kind of snapped back into place, and she came back to life.
Yeah, she did the whole Terminator thing. I mean, that was more robot than, you know, that was creepy. That was some...
saying, it was scary, too. So, yeah. I mean, are they trying to tell us that she's unkillable? Is that the idea?
I don't know. I don't know where they're going with Rose, but I was shocked by that one. You know, wasn't shocked that Raven hurt her bad, but then she got killed, and then the way she snapped back, I mean, I've seen that effect in other movies and other series and stuff, and usually that's reserved for someone who's, like, possessed or someone that isn't human, someone that's, like, the latest comic book example, the best comic book example I can think of is Nebula. You see that with Nebula all the time, but Nebula is mostly machine, so what is that saying about, you know, there are so many ways. I don't know what's going on there. It was creepy, but I don't know what's up. So.
Well, the first season of this show had an extreme amount of horror and goth elements and a lot of jump scares to the point where they were so effective because you wouldn't really expect that on a Titan show. And I think they started off this season getting away from that. They lightened it up quite a bit. And I think that Rose's resurrection was a bit of a return to some of that jump scare element, because it was really scary. I was like, oh my goodness, what did I just see?
Yeah.
You know. It was really something.
I think what, you know, the only thing from a story perspective, I think I have an idea where they might go with Rose, and that it seems fairly apparent to me that Rose blames her father for what happened to Jericho.
Right.
And that's the cause of the split between them. And I don't think she has any idea what Grayson and the other Titans had to do with that, which is why she wanted to hear so much what that conversation between Grayson and I don't remember who's now. I think it was Grayson and Slade that were having the conversation, but it might have been just the Titans themselves. And they were eavesdropping on them. Yeah, I think that's what it was. And they were talking about Jericho's death and what they did. And she wanted to hear that. And I think that's going to come back to bite some people in the butt later in this season. Because I think Rose is going to find out the truth. And then it's not going to be pretty. So
No, we can definitely see that coming. Speaking of returning, they finally brought Starfire back to the main group and the main action. And it's no secret that I really don't like this characterization of Starfire at all. But I will say, she works better with the main group. Having her off on her own adventure just made me roll my eyes every time I saw it. I was like, blah, blah, blah. Can we get through this? You know, are you going to go back to Tamaran? I don't think so.
Right.
Why would you be on the show if you're just going to go back? So, you know, so it just felt like they were kind of treading water until she got back with the main group. But this was the first episode that I actually really liked and believed her and Raven together as a contrast, because they visually contrast, you know, just in terms of skin tone, in terms of height, in terms of age.
The visuals of their powers.
Yeah. And I could really see the deep differences between them, but also it's the first time I felt that sisterly bond where Raven is like, you know, in a very real sense, nobody gets me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, people would judge me, and I'm struggling with things that I don't think, you know, all these boys around me could handle. And you're really the only one that I could talk to that I have even a hope or a prayer of, you know, maybe relating or getting through or whatever. And I really liked their bond this time. Before I felt it was a little bit rushed, but now I really felt like I could understand where Raven's coming from.
Well, I'm gonna take that a little bit further in that this was the first time that I got the impression that the thing that's going to tie all of this together and is going to make the Titans the true leader of Titans, as far as the crew that keeps everyone together, is going to be Starfire and not Dick. Dick is going to be the guy who's right there beside her, and is the leader, maybe hopefully from a tactical sense, but you could definitely feel the writers and the show and the group have a different unity and a different, it's almost like she has a healing factor for the group when she showed up. Just her ability, her healing factor on Raven, her ability to touch and help the stuff going with Donna, she can help Dick. And she doesn't really have that much effect on Hawk and Dove, but she has quite an effect on the younger people in the group. So she really is the kind of the tie that binds. And, you know, going back to the stuff with Tamaran and everything, it's just, it's another one of those things. It's like, it's another loose end. We were talking about before is you have a limited amount of time to tell stories. You left the giant, you know, the matzo ball of Raven hanging out there. Or you've got a giant matzo ball of some dude locked up in a ship who was sent by Blackfire, and they want her back on Tamaran. I mean, that's a whole season right there. That's just hanging out there right now. So what's going on with that too? You know, it's like you got a limited amount of time to stories, and you've got two major plot lines that are hanging out there while you're doing the third. And there may be a fourth that I'm missing as well. So.
Okay. Do you know what you just made me realize when you talked about leadership?
Yeah.
Just made me realize that Grayson is Cyclops, Starfire is Storm, and Raven is Jean Grey.
Yep, that's a great example.
And following that, I think what you said is accurate. I think they're setting up Star to really take the lead because out of all of them, she seems to be the only one that doesn't fly off the deep end.
She's given emotionally stable.
Right. Like, given the situations that they're in, she seems to be the only one that's like, yeah, well, you know, this is a part of life and we just have to deal. Because everybody else, I mean, Hank feels like he's two beer cans short of a suicide. You know, like he is going to take himself out. If he gets wasted one night, he's going to end it. That's right. What he feels like to me. Like, he's just so broken and so angry and so feeling like he's impotent. And that's how Dawn keeps making him feel.
Which would be interesting if they turn that into, you know, what Hawk really is, which is he's that incarnation of anger and violence and everything. And he's using that to fuel, you know, give even fuel some sort of meta power, you know, give that to him. That would be very interesting. But then you contrast that with Dove, who is not very Dove-like a lot of times. So.
That's right. She's not a pacifist. She's not gentle. She's a better hand-to-hand melee fighter than he is. And I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of a Dove in name only.
Right.
And they don't seem to be interested in putting the built-in contrast to the characters in these particular versions, because I really don't see a lot of contrast. I just see an unhappy couple, and the only contrast is one of them can still be a superhero and the other one really can't but doesn't want to give it up.
Right. And it's unfortunate, because one of the great things about Hawk and Dove in the comics and in when they've appeared in different movies, or not movies, animated series and stuff like that, is that you often see that contrast, like they did the version of the two brothers, Hawk and Dove in Justice League. And there's one episode where they're with Wonder Woman and they went to, I think, Markovia to deal with some stuff. And, you know, they're different ways of dealing with problems. And it turned out that, you know, Hank was good at dealing with problems that needed brute force solutions. But at one point, the solution required a cooler head and a peaceful, nonviolent approach. And that was Dove's wheelhouse. And he came in, you know, so he really had the contrast.
And, you know, like I told you, this Hank is Worf. So, you know, Rose is trying to get away after she eavesdropped on the conversation and finds out what's going on. And everybody goes to stop her. And Hank stops her. And then Dawn comes rushing in and starts reprimanding him. Once again, scolding him, beating him up, let her go. And she kicks him. And I'm telling you, man, he's Worf. He can't win.
And then Hank got his butt kicked, you know? I was like, man, Hank.
Because he held back. He held back. If he had let her go, Dawn would have been mad. And he stopped her, and Dawn was still mad. That's what I'm saying. Yep. He can't win.
I have to go back to Corey for a second. There's one thing I did want to mention. One of the coolest effects in this episode was the fight with Corey, Dick, and Slade. And Corey was melting the bullets that Slade was firing at her. Did you notice that?
Now that, yes, I very much did. That introduced another thing, because I thought about it almost more than anything else in the episode. I'm saying to myself, now wait. Is she faster than bullets? Is she creating a heat shield as the bullets are fired? Or is it kind of a perpetual thing that can't get through? Or like, because it at first, if you think about it, it really kind of looked like bullets and bracelets. It
right.
Kind of looked like a Wonder Woman move. And I was like, oh, wait. So, but I very much enjoyed that whole thing. I'm like, okay, well, my only response to that is I hope they don't nerf her and make us, you know, make her forget in later episodes that she can do that.
Right. And that whole fight sequence, once Dick got done being stupid and they got down to the actual fight involving Corey, Dick, and Slade, that was outstanding. That was some of the best, I mean, hands down, live action fight sequence, movies, TV shows, anything. That was some of the best comic book fight sequence that I've seen in anything, I think. That was so well done, in my opinion. I thought that was really, really good. The stuff between Slade and Dick, when Corey got knocked out, was great. The stuff between Deathstroke being able to hold his own while he's fighting both of them was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And then Corey was actually using her powers against Slade, and Slade still holding his own. You know, a lot of times with these guys like Slade or whatever, they wouldn't have Corey use her powers. No, she had user powers, and they were still up against it with Slade, which was awesome. So good.
Well, I think, like you said, I think it was a very Deathstroke thing to do. And I think they've got a really good handle on how to present Deathstroke. It's a really good book-to-screen translation because he's that awesome, formidable fighter, but it also getting in your head. But, yeah, able to hold his own because he's been able to hold his own against the whole Justice League in the comics.
Right, definitely.
But I agree with you. My thought after seeing that, honestly, was just that I wanted some more.
Definitely.
I was like, that was some great fighting. I'm like, can we get some more of that? I want to see him spar again. But the big thing for me, and I'm sure for many other people, was I thought for sure once Slade cuts whatever was happening with Jason and Grayson grabs him and then he drops him.
Right.
I thought Corey was going to light up and jump out the window and fly down and grab him. Now, I'm hoping that'll be the opening scene of the next episode. But I'm like, Donna can fly, Corey can fly, so Jason shouldn't be dying this way.
Right.
But I really thought she was going to catch fire and just jump out the window and be like, I got you.
My thought was going to be Donna. I thought Donna was going to show up because they showed them hearing the fight, and then she's going to leap or fly and catch Jason. But, yeah, that was my thought, too, especially since, they ended on that cliffhanger. And initially I was like, oh, Jason Todd's going to die. And I thought about it, I was like, yeah, when they end on a cliffhanger with somebody falling, that person hardly ever dies. It's like, if he was going to die, he would have died in the episode. So I think someone's going to catch him.
I also think it's interesting that Corey, in this version, this TV version of the Titans, Corey has known Grayson the least amount of time. But she was able to figure out that he was doing a bait and switch on his plan at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna kind of didn't. I found that really interesting because Donna's supposed to know him better. But Corey just kind of understood that, Dick was just giving him the runaround or whatever, that he was going to go do something stupid or surrender to Slade. And, however that would have played out if Corey hadn't showed up. But Corey was able to step through everything that Grayson was saying and realize what he was going to do. I thought that was really interesting. And that is something that I think, going back to what you said earlier about the whole leadership thing.
Right.
Because she's demonstrating a better mastery and knowledge of how he thinks than even Donna.
I think this has less to do with Grayson. I mean, it has something to do with him, but I think it has more to do with the fact that, like we were talking about, that Corey is the most emotionally stable person. She's also the person that probably has the most life experience of all of them. She's royalty from Tamaran. She's had to deal with all the politics and BS there. She's had to deal with betrayals. She's probably had to deal with stuff with her sister, Blackfyre. She knows all the ins and outs of the politics and how all this is going on. And I think that, I think she saw Dick coming from 5 miles away. She knows what he's going to do before he does a lot of times. She understands where he's coming from, what he wants to do, what tricks he wants to play. She's on top of all of that. She is the. I don't think there's any fooling her in that respect, in that regard. At least not at this moment for this Dick Grayson. So,
yeah, that's a good point in terms of the breadth of her experience, given who she is on this show. That's really, really true. And even though she kind of has a bit of a ghost in her past, it's more of a personal freedom kind of thing than it is a I messed up kind of thing.
Right.
Because all the other Titans are heavy with the sins of their past, and Corey's the only one that, maybe doesn't like where she's coming from, but it doesn't, feel like maybe she blew up half a Tamaran or something.
Right. I mean, there are other versions of Starfire. Like, one of the interesting things in Starfire in the comics a lot of times is that she's naive in the ways of Earth, and has a certain way of going about her and can be even naive as a person to a certain extent. Like, I remember a recent comic with her that I read in it where she's just walking around nude because it's nothing to her, and the family she's living with, there's like some 50-year-old boy, and she's like, oh yeah, I forgot that I'm supposed to wear clothes when I'm around you for some reason, I don't know why, but throw some clothes on. I mean, that's Starfire. A lot of times this version of Starfire, She studied Earth. She knows what's going on. And really, I think one of the interesting things is that she's running from responsibility and shackles back on Tamaran, but she's made a choice to accept responsibility and some form of shackles with these people she's now going to have around her in the Titans.
Well, like so many stories that deal with an errant prince or errant princess, it's, you know, when you're born into royalty, basically your life is decided for you.
Right.
And so you always have that character that tries to tell you, you know, this is your destiny, this is your heritage. People like us don't get a choice. And I'm sure that speech is coming at some point for Corey, but for now, she's making, you know, the very natural choice of saying, I would like to live a while where I get to decide what I do. You know, I like to live in a space where I don't have to be the queen. I can just be.
Right. And that's really a timeless trope that works, because it's true. Unfortunately, I, you know, not to get too much into this, but I remember reading something about the baby that Meghan Markle and I think Prince Harry, I don't follow them that closely, but I was reading something about their latest baby, and they decided not to give him a title because he's not technically in the succession. Uh-huh. And so not giving him the Royal Highness title, he's allowed to go out and have a job and stuff like that. And he could do that up until the point that his uncle would become king, and then suddenly he becomes part of the royal succession, and then he's expected to do X, Y, and Z. And I was thinking about it. I was like, my God, what a horrible way to live. I was just like, I may be poor, you know, but at least I could do what I want. I was like, that is terrible. So,
reaching into the future, do you want to see Jason Todd die now? What's your attitude towards him now? Do you want to see him go? Like, do you hope nobody rescues him next episode or what?
I'm split on that. Part of me wants him to die, not because I don't want the character around, but because I want Red Hood.
Oh, okay. So you mean you want him to get to a Lazarus pit and come back?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want that. I want Jason Todd Red Hood. But I don't think that this particular scenario lends itself to Red Hood. I think this would be great if what they do is that one of the girls ends up saving him, so Donna or Starfire, which is going to make his sense of, you know, I was rescued and I was rescued by them and Dick came and was a sacrifice. It's going to just make him that much more reckless and that much more resentful. And then I want to see him do something dumb with somebody. I don't think they're going to have Joker kill him, but I want him to be in that situation, you know, a crowbar type situation. You all know what I'm talking about. Right. And then that happened. And then he's going to end up coming back through a Lazarus pit of some sort and become Red Hood. That's what I would like to see. Now, I don't know if that can happen this season or next season, but I think that would be interesting.
And finally, we touched on it briefly before. Finally, what do you think is going to happen to the power balance when Superboy shows up? I mean, because you've got Corey and you've got Donna, although Donna has been nerfed so badly, it's painful for me to watch her now.
But I watched that trailer with Superboy.
Yeah, when a Kryptonian shows up, you know, that kind of changes everything.
Yeah, and it doesn't appear that they nerfed Connor at all.
Right.
Connor appears to have every skill he has in the comic books, which is just going to be, I mean, the level of challenge, if he becomes part of the team full time, that they have to face and have Connor there. Because if you want to be a challenge and Connor's on the team, and you don't have that level of threat, then Connor has to be off, like, sunning on the beach or something. Because right now, with the level, what I saw in that trailer, and then with Crypto, too, you know, if you bring Crypto in.
I love Crypto. He's my favorite super pet. Love Crypto.
Well, I like Ace the Bat Hound, too, but I just like seeing the crazy, you know, dog with the cowl on. It just makes me laugh every time, you know. Uh-huh. But I think Crypto's cool, And, as much as I admire Deathstroke, I'm sorry, even this version of Deathstroke, from what I saw from that trailer, has no chance against Connor Kent. You know, it'd be over. It'd be done.
Right. That's right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And then the whole implication was going on because come to find out, watch that trailer, that he tracked down Lex Luthor's father. And that's who he's talking to. So it's like, okay, we're expanding suddenly with Connor Kent coming in, and he tracked down Lex Luthor's father and he's wearing the S shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Our world is quickly expanding. I'm sorry. You brought him in and he's going to be with the Titans and Bruce Wayne's going to know about him. You got to bring Superman in eventually. You got to. He's got to make an appearance and be like, what is going on with this kid?
That's the other thing about the DCU in general, but this show in particular, because it's based on the sidekick idea. And I think Jason was the one that called that out. But yeah, when you start bringing in these members like this, you know, we want to see Diana because we know they're there, because Jason talked about, you know, he was on the other side of the world with the Justice League, and we've seen Bruce Wayne now. But yeah, we want to see Superman, and Superman always takes center stage whenever he's on any show.
Right.
Because he's Superman. So right. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to me to see how they do that, because one of the things that I like most about Mark Waid's Justice League run is that he finally gave the Justice League challenges that were worthy of the Justice League. It's like he got it.
Right.
When you have that much power on one team, they have to have a real serious threat, or else it's just kind of a joke. And what so many other writers do is just nerf the team instead of, you know, giving them a challenge where they have to step up, like the White Martians, like when the Earth is being collected, you know, with a bunch of other planets. Like Starro, like, you know, when they get split into their own identities. I just love all that stuff. Right. So that's what I'm thinking for here. I'm thinking like, well, you know, you're going to have to bring in some villains that really kick it up a notch if you're going to have all that power in the Titans, you know, just in the second season, you know?
Definitely, you know, and they've mentioned Hive a couple times on the show. Like, you start bringing in, you know, some Hive members and some stuff like that, you could do some interesting things there, because it doesn't appear that they're going down the right of road of nerfing Connor, which is good. Because from that trailer, I mean, Connor was up against a whole assault team and he destroyed them like it was nothing. You know, he was like, it didn't even, I mean, he's got the super speed. I mean, he's got more speed than they've showed with Donna. I think, you know, they definitely nerfed Donna, and I think she needs a power upgrade. But you made a great point, is that if you're going to do that, you can't be fighting Dr. Light. For as much as he was ramped up, you know, Donna and Connor should have been able to take him out, you know, really quickly. Even Deathstroke is not going to be, you know, he might know about Kryptonite, but it's, you know, that's not going to be much of a challenge for someone like Connor Kent. You need like a Metallo level character, or, you know, a Jinx to come in and mess with, you know, from the animated series to come in and mess with, you know, reality and screw Connor Kent up that way. There's a whole different way you could go, but you need more superpowered characters that can deal with those characters who have powers themselves on the team.
That's right. That's right. They're going to have to do a much more creative deep dive to make the tension real and make the challenges real once you introduce a Kryptonian.
Right.
I mean, that's always the challenge in dealing with them, is how do you make the danger real once you bring in someone that has every power you could have and can't get hurt except for kryptonite or magic.
Right.
So, and I just had that debate too on my Twitter timeline about, see, because I've said for a long time, they need to define how kryptonite affects Kryptonians, because it's never uniform.
Right.
So it's a bit of a writing cheat. And the same with magic, because, you know, if they're talking about reality warping powers, that's one thing. But if they're just talking about you're super strong because of magic, that shouldn't mean anything to Superman.
Right.
But that's a, you know, that's another thing. All right. Well, we're going to wrap this one up. I'm looking forward to the next episode as well. I still am very much enjoying the show. I still think it's lit too darkly. I still think they need to lighten it up a little bit. But, you know, I'm still watching it, still looking forward to every episode, still have that anticipatory feeling.
And I've got a contract setting on my computer for Titans. So I'll just say that.
That's okay. Right. And I want to see where the storylines go. So I'm still interested. So I hope that I can keep that level of interest. Hope they can, you know, keep us all interested throughout the rest of the season, because we don't know how long the show's going to go. if they've already slashed a budget, this might be it.
Yeah. So well, we might, if they continue
have to deal with it.
If they continue on, I would love to see them be successful and expand this universe, because I really want to see all this tie together, and I want to see, even if we don't get a show, I want to see some of those other major players come in. But I want to see, you know, Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, and Titans all existing in a universe where I see they don't even have to be on the same show, but just mention. And I was really sad when Stargirl got canceled or pushed back or whatever's going on with it, because I was excited for that. I like Stargirl a lot, so I was excited to see that, and I was a little sad that that went away. And I'd love to see more of Blue Devil from Swamp Thing make an appearance somewhere and pop up. You know, we were talking about magic. Well, what if Blue Devil showed up because of what's going on with Raven, and then you have, you know, Connor Kent susceptible to magic, so he ends up getting his, you know, butt handed to him by Blue Devil and a misunderstanding or something. There's some really cool stuff that could happen, but they need to get some funding and be successful for all that to happen. So we'll see.
Well, you know, I'm consistent. Dead Man, Metal Man, and the Creeper. That's who I want to see.
All right. Definitely. And
I agree with you about Stargirl, because that was the one show where the premise was based on bringing the other characters in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically a low-key Justice Society show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was super excited. I was like, finally. I mean, we saw some of that on Legends, but they didn't really take it seriously. It was over really quickly. And they don't even wear costumes anymore on Legends.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the real Justice Society, and I thought Stargirl was going to be it. And now, I don't know if we'd call it limbo, but we don't have anything solid in terms of what's coming up.
Yeah, that's bad. I'd like to see that. And I think Swamp Thing was really, really good. And I don't know what's going to happen with that show. But, you know, there was so much promise there. And they set everything up with the I know we're talking about Titans, but kind of the same universe. They set everything up with the the name's escaping me at the moment. But the group that is behind investigating the swamp and everything, which existed in the comics and actually has members of magic that are both good and bad on it. I don't know, it's escaping my mind, but it's a group that's existed in comics before, and they've dealt with magical threats and magical investigations. And it's like this council that had people like Clary and the Witch Boy on it, but they also had Constantine was on it at one point, Dr. Fate was on it. And you have all the different
magic. I can't think of the name either, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, and you know, and when I heard that name, I was watching it with my daughter, and I was all excited. And she said, "Why are you all excited?" I was like, "Oh, I'm going to tell you." And I showed her in the comics. Because I was like, if they do this, this is, you know, they've won me forever if they do this. But I don't know if they're going to do it. So.
All right, folks. Well, that's going to be it for this week. We're both excited to see Titans tomorrow. We'll be back next week with more spoilers, more reviews, more speculation. And also, I want to thank my co-host, David Nemesis Howard, for coming on. Thanks so much for being here, man.
Thank you for having me. Have a great time. I love talking about this stuff with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing the next episode and talking about it.
Awesome. All right, folks, you guys have a good rest of your week, and we will see you next time.
See you later, folks.